Dick, what do you say you and me take a walk over to the tavern?
Let's pull up a chair.
A little something to eat.
Welcome to the Mouse and Castle.
Come on, Johnny, what are we waiting for?
This is a gathering place for fans of all things Disney. So sit back,
chow down,
have some sips, and chit-chat about the magical world created by Walt Disney.
For too long, I've been parched of thirst and unable to quench it.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Mouse and Castle podcast. I'm your host, Riley Blanton. And we have a pretty jam-packed, and I dare say, timely show. There's been a lot of development in the world of the Disney parks, and pretty much none of it's good news. That's the sad that's the sad thing. But I'm excited to talk all about the latest. We're talking layoffs. We're talking possible updates for Disneyland as we've had an ongoing saga of their attempts and ongoing attempts to reopen amidst the pandemic. And so I'm really excited with the guest we have. But before we get to him, I want to also introduce my buddy and yours, Mr. Aaron Goins. How's it going, Aaron?
It's going pretty good, Riley. How have you been?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Hanging in there like you do. Although not as good as my sister, Bethany, who is at Disney World.
I saw that.
Right now.
She snuck a trip on us. Didn't even invite us.
Right? I mean, I knew that they were working it this month, but they were waiting for the exact day. So I learned at the same time you.
Instagram today.
Well, somebody else who's actually also on location at Disney World, I'd like to welcome back to the podcast. It's Chris Provost of Provost Park Pass. Welcome back, Chris.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad to be back. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. Now, we have you on, as I teased at the beginning, as I just want to get the sort of the breakdown, because there's been an ongoing, I think it's fair to say, drama.
Yeah,
between Disney corporate and the parks and their attempts to get reopening guidelines from the state of California. Now, give us some background. Like, what's the timeline to where we got to this week, which, of course, the big headline was kind of 28,000 people laid off. That's kind of
so much has happened. It's so crazy. And there is a lot of pushback. In fact, it's not just Disney. It's actually almost all the theme parks now. They're working together. So we all know the pandemic hit. In April of this year, Governor Newsom, who's the governor of California, he started this economic task force recovery panel. And he invited people to be on his panel to talk about how to stimulate the economy, how to get the economy up and going, which people are very excited about that. What people are really excited is Bob Iger, the former CEO, was invited to be on this task force. So people are like, yeah, because he's so pro-business. And you know that he has Disney's best interest at heart. So people are like, oh, okay, he's going to be pushing to get the parks open, and that's going to be great. Well, that what happened in April. And then after that, what happened was Governor Newsom, he did this like color code of the states to let people know. And the worst was purple, and then went from purple to red to orange and then to yellow. And the thing is in those things that he had, these color codes, he didn't really say what. There was nowhere in there did it say when the theme parks, what color code the theme parks had to be in to reopen. It didn't say that in yellow or orange or the purple or red. And so the theme parks are kind of left out in the rain. It's like, when can we reopen? And they have been begging the governor to have these guidelines of the theme parks. And it's called COPPA. It's the California Amusement Park Association. It represents Disney, Universal Studios, Knott's Berry Farm, Legoland, SeaWorld, Magic Mountain. And they have like this COPPA thing. They issued a letter to the governor says, please issue these guidelines to allow us to open. And the governor was like, yeah, we're getting to that. We'll be getting to that. And you have to keep in sight, people can debate this topic both ways. Mm-hmm. You got people who are like pro Disney, like, hey, Disney should open. Then you got people like, hey, this is all about safety and numbers, and we can't be doing anything too crazy. So I can see where both arguments are coming from both sides. But Disney is like, hey, listen, we've opened up all of our parks around the world. Every single park has opened up except for the one in California. We've not seen any upticks in cases in Florida or anywhere. And so we can handle this. We know how to social distance. We know how to make the safety measures. Let us open. And last Monday, a week ago today, Josh DeMaro, the the chairman for Disney was in California, and he basically begged the governor. He's like, give us the guidelines, let us open up, we can do this, and kind of begged for that. Well, what happened was this health recovery task force, it wasn't the governor, but they came back and said that Disney wasn't even close to being reopened. And that was on this Monday.
Yeah.
And I think that was a real dagger for Disney, because then what happened is on Tuesday, we all heard what happened on Tuesday. That's when Disney announced that they're going to be laying off 28,000 cast members. And this was in California and Florida, but a lot of it was in California. And it happened there, a few on the cruise lines, things like that. But 67% of their part-time workforce was let go or going to be let go. And in Josh DeMaro's letter, he says that this has been exacerbated by California's not allowing it to open. Well, that happened on Tuesday. Then all of a sudden on Wednesday, the state said, hey, we have the guidelines and we're going to be releasing these guidelines to be opening the state. And so people are like, okay. And rumors were leaked. We don't really know what the guidelines were. We heard there's all kinds of rumors. You had to live within 120 miles of the park. They had really reduced hours and things like that. We don't really know. That's all speculation. But what we do know is that on Thursday, Bob Iger, who was on that Economic Task Force recovery panel, he stepped down. And Disney's very political. They didn't say why he steps down, but people in the inner circle says that he's like, hey, we're just miles away. This is wasting our time. We're not getting anywhere closer to opening the parks up. Then that Thursday, the state says that they had come up with their guidelines. Like, we have the guidelines for the theme parks to reopen. They gave those guidelines to the theme parks, to not Sperry Farm, to Disney, Universal. And when the theme parks saw those guidelines, now keep in mind that Disney and those theme parks have been begging for guidelines since April.
Sure,
and
yeah.
Now we're in October. When they saw those guidelines, they said, don't release these guidelines. These are so bad, and this is going to hurt the industry so much. Please don't release these guidelines. So now all of a sudden Disney and all these theme parks are begging them not to release it. And it wasn't just Disney. It was like all of the theme parks. And they said this, and this Kappa responded, says, please, if you're going to do guidelines, have somebody who has theme park experience, because the state of California hadn't really worked with anybody who had any theme park experience. They didn't have anybody from Disney, Universal, Knott's Berry, no input at all. And they said, if you're going to release something hot, let us help you. We'll give you guidance. We'll show you what we can do. What we can do. So everybody thought that last Friday, Governor Newsom was going to have this big press conference. It was announced he's going to have this press conference. And then that morning, that Friday, they said that they were going to take a look at these guidelines and try to work them out. And so that's where we're at right now. We still don't know when the parks are going to open up. And it makes me think that, and this is just me, this is speculation. Everything I talked about, that was fact. This is speculation on my part. If they're going to have the theme parks help them come up with guidelines, that means it's going to take even a little bit longer, because now they got to redo the guidelines and get all ready to go. So we might be out a little while before Disneyland can open up again.
Do you think that big reaction as far as them not wanting to release the guidelines, was that because the guidelines were just so off base as to reality, or was it just too restrictive? Like, what was the big concern?
That's a fantastic question, Aaron. I like that question a lot. And I have contacts at the Disney, and they've been kind of tight-lipped about it. It sounds like to me it was too restrictive, that it wasn't going to allow them to fully operate at what they needed to do to be profitable. And I think the guidelines that they were given would be like, if we did this, we would be operating at a loss. And so they're trying to avoid that. And like, one of the rumors was you had to be within 100 or 120 miles. That would just defeat the tourism. All the hotels, all the hotels around Disneyland, they wouldn't get any business. It would really hurt the economy there. A lot of the hotel workers, they wouldn't be able to come back. And we heard that they had really reduced hours. And so for Disney bringing some of these employees back and say, we only work for a couple hours, people wouldn't be coming. Would you go to the theme parks and go for a couple hours, or only go on weekends? So we don't really know what the guidelines were, but it must have been really, really restrictive, because all of the theme parks across the table were against it. I mean, all of them. There wasn't a standout where one of them was like, yeah, we'll open it, this is great. I mean, all of them are like, no, don't do this to us.
That's tough because, like, this balance is what we've been talking about constantly across the economic sector, and it's something that do you think there was a is there a sort of bargaining chip that Disney's using of like, hey, we're operating the Florida parks at, you know, maybe not a big profit, but at least that was the big target. We heard them talking about, hey, we're not going to reopen unless we can at least pay all the bills. Do you think that they were sort of maybe Disney's being not throwing weight around, but like they have that confidence behind the what's operating in Florida and that's what they want to do in California and they're just not willing to do it?
No, I think that Disney knows how to operate their parks during this pandemic. They've proven their model in Florida. It's been very successful. They enforce the social distancing in a really positive manner. They are having reduced capacity on rides. The restaurants, they've forced almost everybody to go to mobile ordering to get their foods. And it's been very successful for them. I don't think Disney's really trying to push their weight around. But I think Disney has drawn a line in the sand saying, if we can't do these things, it wouldn't work. It wouldn't help us to open up. They have so many different employees and sectors. Like we think about like just the Disney cast members, it affects the hotel industry. It affects the travel industry. It affects the airlines. It affects all the food and restaurants located around the parks. And when these guidelines were so restrictive that it wouldn't have helped even that economy, I think Disney's like, this is not going to help us.
Yeah. You know, us as Disney fans, we're sad to hear, you know, that when parks are closed, because, you know, we think about our own experience and wanting to go. But then when you think about the impact on the people that actually work for Disney, the cast members, it's really eye-opening. When I saw that number, 28,000, I was just like, it hit me. I'm like, it's just insane to think about the number of people. Do you think that, you know, if they had come to, you know, an agreement earlier, that could have been avoided? Or do you think these were inevitable?
Oh, that's a really good question. And I don't know if I'm not like the expert on that to really answer. I could give my opinion. I think if they would have been able to open earlier, they probably could have avoided a lot of these layoffs. Disney was paying. The thing is what a lot of people don't realize, Disney was paying their health benefits for all their furloughed employees. So all the employees, even though they weren't working and they're furloughed, they're still getting their health insurance paid for by Disney, which is a very admirable thing because you don't have to do that when you furlough an employee. You can just let them go and furlough them and say, hey, we can bring you back. But Disney is like, no, we're going to do that. I think Disney had every intention to bring people back to work. It's cost prohibitive for them to have to retrain all these new employees. I think they wanted to bring all their cast members back and have them have that magic come back. And I think it probably could have been avoided if they could have opened a little bit sooner. That's just the problem is the state of California has different ideas on the safety measures than what Disney and the other theme parks do.
Yeah. I remember like seeing headlines of like Josh Damaro personally going around at downtown Disney in Anaheim and like talking to cast members and stuff like that when this happened, because it was a huge impact to the Disney community. Like understandably so, but I was pleasantly surprised. I guess it was at least heartwarming to see how much everyone was coming together to support a lot of the cast members.
And you have to kind of go back. You realize that Josh Damaro, so that was on Monday when he met with the governor, the panel to say, hey, let's open. He was there on Friday, and a lot of people speculated that when he was coming out there, that the chatter in the Disney community was that Josh and Governor Newsom were going to have an announcement about the reopening of Disney parks. And I think that a lot of people thought that. I think from what I heard, I think even Disney thought that was going to be happening. And then when he got out there and they had those meetings, it just kind of fell apart, and they realized that Disney's like, we can't open to these restrictive guidelines that you're giving us. And so then that Tuesday, the layoffs, of course, happened. And what you're talking about is afterwards, downtown Disney, California has opened up. Josh, I've actually met him twice. He's a really good guy, really good guy. And I believe from my experiences when I met with him and talked to him, I believe that he truly cares about the cast members. That like it's not just, you know, every chairman always says, we care about our employees.
Sure.
But sometimes they're like, they're dispensable. But not with Josh. Josh has always treated them so well. And what happens, he went to downtown Disney and he was meeting with those cast members and he's apologizing to them and listening to them and their frustrations. And he was just there because I think he feels so bad about the decisions they have to do. But when you realize it is a company, right? And if you can't open up, we think of Disney sometimes as like almost as omnipotent that they can handle anything.
Sure.
And almost any company, if you were required, any business, if you're required to remain your doors closed for 6 months, and you're still paying health benefits for a lot of your employees, very few companies could survive that.
Yeah.
With no income coming in like that. So yeah, and Disney's been hit really hard. In their second quarter, it's estimated they lost $4.72 billion. And that's the first time in two decades where Disney has reported a loss.
Yeah.
You know, Disney's always been making money, and now they're reporting losses. And so it's definitely taking a toll on them financially.
Yeah, I was taking a look at the numbers, and like that 28,000, that's about a quarter of the workforce.
Yeah.
So it's they're about 25% layoffs across the board for the theme parks. Crazy.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Does that include Florida too?
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. So about what right now, today is Monday, October 5th. It's estimated around 6,100 employees in Florida have been contacted.
Mm. Yeah, I saw the other headline that I saw, the NBA Experience, I believe, laid off every single employee for that.
Yeah. I haven't heard that, but I can see. I don't know if they reopened that part of the. So I can understand that it's probably what they would do that.
Yeah,
cool. And I would have to imagine, because when you go to Disney, and I go to Disney World a lot more than Disneyland, so that's been my experience. But, you know, it's such a specialized job for a lot of these people, and kind of what they do is so unique in that, you know, you do wonder what the experience is going to be like if you go to Disney now. You know, kind of these jobs is, you know, are you going to be able to tell, you know, things, you know, or just aren't, there's not as many employees around, or some of the people that are, you're used to having those kind of specialized type of, you know, workers and cast members around, is the vibe, I guess, for lack of a better word, going to be
absolutely
significantly different.
Aaron, did you say you mostly go to Disneyland? Is that what you're mostly?
No, World is usually, because I'm on the East Coast. Oh,
so I'm mostly Disneyland is my experience. And cast members are what makes Disney so special, right? It's that they bring that magic and make it really special. And this is not a slight at all. Like, but there's like a Magic Mountain in California. Magic Mountain is Six Flags. I love Six Flags, and they have some of the most amazing roller coasters you'll ever go on. But you don't go to Magic Mountain Six Flags for this amazing experience of cast members of Magic. You're going there to jam rides and have thrill rides and just, you know, experience that. Disney's something special, and that's what they know that. When their cast members walk, they call it going on stage. When their cast members come from backstage on going on stage, they pretend that they're playing a part, and they are playing a part in our magic there.
I had a similar experience when last time I went to Universal Studios in Orlando. Mm-hmm. You know, I know they really try to be Disney in a lot of ways, and they've kind of accomplished that with some of the Harry Potter stuff. Yeah. But still, it's a significant difference between being at Universal Studios and being at Disney World in how their employees interacted and stuff.
Yeah.
And maybe with the exception of the Harry Potter areas, the rest of the park just did not have that same feel.
And it doesn't mean it's bad. It's just different. And I think that people, that's why people are willing to pay more money to go to Disney, because that's part of that experience that you're looking forward to and enjoying that Disney magic.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris, it's really sad news to bring you on, but I really appreciate you kind of giving us a full picture of this process, because I think what it does tell us is that this is complicated. It's difficult, and they're really difficult decisions. And it's something I'm sure that neither Disney nor the state of California are taking lightly as they continue to go back and forth. So I'm sure that as they engage and re-engage, that we're going to get some kind of plan. But how soon, maybe as a parting question, do you think, how close are they to maybe actually getting guidelines?
That's the $1 million question. If I knew that answer, people would be freaking out, right? I think that they are going to be working together. I'm hoping that we hear something by November.
Yeah.
I think that I'm starting to lose a little bit of hope that will open up in 2020 for Disneyland. The thing is, this is my honest opinion about Disney. I honestly believe that Disney, they want people to have a really good experience, but Disney doesn't want people to go and get sick or catch COVID at their parks. And they are operating what I believe that they believe is the acceptable level. In Florida, for example, Governor DeSantis, he's like, open it up, you guys, open it up. But Disney's like, we're gonna maybe increase a little bit, but we still want to make sure that our guests are safe and there. I think Disney really is looking at that. We just have to get that California feel is going on. This color code thing they have is really, really, so for every, if you get seven people who are infected for 100,000 people, that's a purple code. And if you get people who are 6.9 people infected, that's in orange. And then you get 3.99, that is red. I'm sorry, red, orange, the red's the first one. And then the last one is, if you have less than one, is yellow. So it's going to be hard for them. A lot of, like, Universal Studios in L.A., that's a purple. I don't know how they're going to get out of that for a long time. So maybe they'll be open for a while. I think that they're going to have to work. If that's the case, the numbers are going to have to come down in order for them to adhere to Governor Newsom's color code plan.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Totally understand. Well, Chris, before you go, let everybody know, because I know you guys at Provost Park Pass, you just launched your own podcast.
Yeah, we did.
So welcome to the club. Tell everybody about it and then where they can find you online.
Absolutely. So it's Provost Park Pass. Our YouTube channel is all about Disney and secrets revealed and things about Disney. We love Disney. And that's on YouTube. It's Provost Park Pass. Our podcast is also Provost Park Pass. Our Instagram is Provost Park Pass.
Makes it
easy. Twitter is Provost Park Pass. We try to make it easy for everybody. But sometimes you guys need to come on our podcast.
Oh,
chit chat, talk, and let your fans come hear your voice on our podcast. Ours is, you guys dive into these deep topics here about this. Ours is more let's talk about our favorite memory.
We are like the Financial Times of Disney podcasts.
We're constantly, I love it though. I love it.
It's my fault, really.
It's definitely your fault. If it was up to me, we'd just be doing like top 10 favorite Disney songs every episode.
I love it. I love you guys' podcast, and that's why we reached out. The second you reached out, I'm like, yes, I'd love to be on it because you guys are very informative.
Absolutely. No, we'll stay in touch, Chris. Happy to anytime, and best of luck and have fun out there at Disney.
You bet, guys. You take care. Have a good one.
Take care. All right, I got to talk to you about this. Aaron, so Chris really describes, I think, a really good timeline for the tragedy that has struck and where we find ourselves now. The interesting thing is we're on the cusp of you yourself going to Disney World, and you touched on it briefly, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts on the experience side of things. What are your concerns going into the parks when it comes to... not just, you know, mask mandates and the other things that have changed, but how, you know, Disney layoffs may impact the park experience. And I attached a USA Today article that kind of brought up this question, but I was just curious what you thought.
Yeah, I mean, it is, like, just setting aside the fact that it's very sad and tragic that so many people have lost their jobs, so it starts to sound a little like... you know, first world problems,
sure,
complaining
sure.
about your, you know, what your experience is going to be like. But from a consumer perspective, you know, when you're going to Disney, are you going to get your money's worth at this point? And for me, I do have some concerns as far as if I feel like I'm going to be getting the value that I did initially pay for. I paid for it so long ago, it's almost like that money's gone anyways. So, yeah. So it's like it's spent, it's out of pocket, spent money. And, you know, we had already kind of, you know, push the trip off. And, you know, at this point, it's just like, let's just go and let's just, you know, kind of have whatever experience we can have. And, you know, as I don't know if I'd mentioned it, but, you know, we kind of cut down the trip a little bit to be a shorter trip. It's going to be just me and my son instead of my whole family.
Yeah.
So, but I think, there is some concern there with just more and more that I hear about things that are closed, things that are being refurbished. You know, you want to be immersed in the Disney magic while you're there. And I think right now, the way things are, it will be hard to feel that immersion.
Yeah.
You know, just because of everything that's going on. And it's completely understandable that things are the way they are.
Yeah.
But from a consumer's perspective, I do feel like, you know, it's not like they're giving me any kind of a discount or they're not giving me any kind of any money back on, you know, the tickets that I had already purchased.
It's interesting because it's a tightening of the belt when it comes to the Disney park experience, in the same way that families, when it comes to your food budget, your jobs lost, like there's this, it's very consistent with where we are now, but I think this is sort of Disney admitting that this is here to stay a while longer. And not just the Disneyland thing. I'm sure that's sort of the flashy headline, you know, Bob Iger quits in outrage, you know. but I really do think that there's serious long-term financial planning, and they looked at what is sustainable. And I think what this decision does tell us about Disney, and I'll just jump straight to the USA Today article because they say it better than I do. They quote expert, park expert Lynn Testen, and he says, quote, these layoffs mean that Disney's planning to keep its park resort operations about where they are now. So what does that mean? That probably means we're not going to see any of the longer pre-pandemic hours. We're going to keep the shorter hours. No special park events. No, you know, extra Star Wars night. You know, Food and Wine's heavily modified. No not-so-scary Halloween. Any kind of extra bonus events, probably not going to happen. We're going to see this much more modified system where they're operating at fewer hours, no special events, and it's sort of like it's cutting back to the bare minimum, which I think is something that Disney was very, very hesitant to do because that's their entire brand is not the, you know, barely acceptable minimal theme
right.
park.
Yeah. You go to Disney for the spectacle, you know, for how well things are done. And I think right now it's going to feel a little broken.
Yeah.
I haven't been yet since all of this started. I do plan to go, you know, barring any major, you know, events. I do plan to go in a couple weeks. And so I'll have a better idea probably when I'm on the ground. But, yeah. even my son's going. He hasn't been for a couple years.
Yeah.
He's a little older. And this is going to be, you know, his first time going to Toy Story Land. It's first time going to Galaxy's Edge.
Yeah,
he's
going to
have a lot of firsts on this trip. And there's part of me that's like, ooh, should I just wait? Should I, I've already made the decision, but
sure.
There is definitely part of me that's thinking maybe if we had just delayed it another year, we could get the full experience. It was touch and go because it is a hard decision for people to make at this point. Do you go or do you wait? And we ultimately decided to go, but you know, it will be interesting to see kind of what that experience is, not only for myself, but also for my son and talking and kind of getting his feedback.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll have him on the show.
Well, there's an element of the element of the experience, and then there's just the element of safety. And I know at the risk, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I'm curious for you, was it talking to other people who'd been to the parks or just Disney's reputation as a company or waiting and seeing the numbers? What was it to you that was like, okay, we can go to this sort of minimally acceptable level of risk, but with the social distancing, and we've seen Disney committed enough to maintain a standard of safety that you are willing to certainly not make maybe do the big family trip that you did last time. You're like, okay, we're going to do a small trip, me, my son. What was that calculus for you?
Yeah, I think hearing other people that had gone, you know, because you hear the news, you hear everything sensationalized. And you see, you know, they had images of, you know, from a certain angle and it looks like, oh, wow, like people aren't social distancing. But when you hear people that have actually been.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's, you know, it's not crowded. It's easy to social distance. They're really being strict about people wearing masks. They're really sticking to their policies and guidelines right now.
Yeah.
And it made me feel like it's probably just as safe for me to go to Disney World right now than it would be for me to take my son with me to the grocery store. You know, like they're probably doing a better job. Disney's probably doing a better job of sanitizing and you know, making sure that they're forcing people to follow guidelines than a lot of the local places around here that we are, you know, still going to from time to time.
Yeah.
So I do trust that they're, you know, doing everything they can possibly do. Also, it does help that neither me or my son are in that kind of at-risk demographic.
Sure.
So obviously, if you know, I wouldn't bring my grandma with me to Disney World right now. You know, me and my son, I think, would be at very, very low risk to be exposed or even, you know, and if we were, having a full recovery.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is. It is one of those things. I'm sure there's going to be people. It's, you know, it's not something I'm going to be really talking about a lot to friends and family and on Facebook and all that kind of stuff, because there are plenty of people out there that probably will look at that and say, wow, I can't believe you're doing that. You know, I can't believe you're going to Disney World right now. There will be some of that vacation shaming. So,
yeah, it's a thing. It's a real thing.
Tough decision.
I literally just had a conversation with my wife, with Savannah, and we were talking about this because for the first time, I am going to be traveling for work to a conference at Creech Air Force Base outside of Las Vegas. So I have to get on a plane. And I was like, I actually found myself, I guess, well, I because I I'm healthy and Savannah's healthy, but you have to do that personal calculus of like, I was thinking to myself, okay, what are the airports and where am I going through and what do I need to be careful of? And then like, what are the actual CDC guidelines for traveling by air? And then here's the thing. So much stuff is sensationalized and or the opposite where it's like, it's all fake news. And of course, it's never either of those extremes. But I actually read the CDC website and its guidelines for air travel, and they have very reasonable, very good guidelines and very good data on sort of the decision matrix of whether you should go. And they do that exact thing for you, like what risk category are you, how necessary is the travel, that sort of thing. So
right.
It's you know, if you be equipped with information and you can make a good decision.
Yeah, and we're big believers in being safe for ourselves and also helping keep others safe.
Exactly.
So we're not doing the whole like, oh, well, we'll wear a mask only when they force us to, but then we rip it off as soon as we don't have to. Like, we're gonna follow every guideline, you know, throughout and make sure that we're keeping ourselves safe and keeping others safe as much as we possibly can. And so, I think my son's the same way. We wear masks so much now. The mask part of this doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah, no.
It's other factors, I think.
Yeah.
But the mask, you know, wearing a mask around the Disney parks, I don't, that's not going to be a problem at all.
Yeah, I think so. And that's the thing, is taking personal responsibility for your exposure and safety. And that's the thing. I'm sure if you went to a Disney park, you could find people who aren't social distancing. But I'm also sure you could avoid those people. I'm sure.
Right, yeah.
I think you could do that as far as taking responsibility to be able to safely still have that quality family time and experience. Because I think it's important. I think it's important to be able to take responsibility and balance good decision making. So enough of the seriousness. I did want to kind of ask you where you were, because I'm excited to hear your report back, what you guys are up to. So enough about all the grim stuff. What's your plans? You mentioned Galaxy's Edge. It'll be his first for that, and Toy Story. So it sounds like Hollywood Studios is going to be a big focus.
Yeah. And we had already purchased tickets before. So we did the whole one park per day, 4 day ticket.
Oh, okay. Nice.
So we stuck with that. And so we're going to do one park, 1 day each, and fit them all in. So we'll get to hit all four parks, but nice. It's just going to be a 5 day trip. So it's going to be, it's going to be pretty quick. We plan, we're going to Epcot. My son's the most excited for Epcot, which I don't understand why. Every time I ask him, like, why? What's the Epcot that you're so excited about?
What does he say?
I think he just has some really good memories there. He loves Soarin'. He loves Test Track. I think that for whatever reason is the one that sticks out to him. But I'm kind of like, are you sure it's not Animal Kingdom? Or are you sure it's not Magic Kingdom? Like, those are the ones that are a little bit more exciting.
Yeah.
And then he's never been to, kind of the new Hollywood studio, so he wouldn't know. We plan to hit all four parks. We're going to try to maximize the times, open to close, which I'm not typically an open to close guy, but when the hours are this short, I think I will be.
That's true. It's much more manageable now. So, that's awesome.
Yeah. And I did make it a point to kind of make reservations for different activities and dinner, too, just so we had some things to plan, because I like to plan. So, so we got some dinner reservations, and that will give us an opportunity to, kind of take our masks off and kind of sit and relax.
That'll be good.
Each day.
That'll be good. Well, so, I look forward to it. Is it later this month or next month? Oh, wow.
Just in a couple of weeks. As of today, it's within the next 2 weeks.
Nice. So, I'm looking forward to it.
I'm excited. I'm excited and also very – I wouldn't say – I'm not nervous by any means, but I'm interested to see – how this thing's going to be.
I'll tell you what, man. It's so funny because this just occurred to me. The last time I traveled anywhere during this pandemic, period, outside of, a 3-hour range of the apartment I'm sitting in right now, was back in February for my bachelor party at Disney. That was the last thing that I traveled ever for. Which is kind of crazy.
That's the last time we were. The last time we were at Disney.
Yeah.
Which we had, I had two more Disney trips planned after that trip that were both canceled. So, so it is kind of weird, usually as us, doing this podcast, we would
have talked about multiple trips to Disney this year.
Yeah, I thought especially,
and I'm sure you and Savannah would have been down there on weekends from time to time.
Oh yeah,
You know, we both would have been out at Star Wars Celebration and doing the Disney stuff out there. Star Wars Night, we didn't get to do Star Wars Night. How cool would that have been? You know, so there's a lot we missed because of this, and a lot we weren't able to really discuss, I think, because of this. So we've kind of, you know, I'm ready to go back for sure.
No, I am too. We'll be we're looking at a possibility next year. Being active duty, theme parks are still banned for military, but they're looking at as they're getting guidelines and numbers, they're looking at approving that. And I think it'll be probably after the holiday season, 2020, that'll probably be approved. So hopefully early next year, maybe at least for my unit. They can approve that kind of thing, which would be which
some of the international parks are open, so you could always go to one of those.
That's true.
I guess those are probably off limits too, though.
Well, kind of. It depends. It's unit to unit dependent. But speaking of international resorts, Tokyo Disneyland just reopened their brand new Fantasyland, Enchanted Tale of Beauty and the Beast. And as well as a bunch of other improvements that they unveiled. And this caught me by surprise because I don't follow the international parks as much, being U.S. biased. But have you seen some of the pictures of this, Aaron? It looks amazing.
Oh, yeah, definitely. There's so much, not only Tokyo, but just the other international parks, too. There's so many areas that are so unique that you're like, wow, like I really want to visit these parks because – and it's the same with the – like. Florida versus California. There's a lot of differences, but there's a lot of similarities too.
Yeah.
But yeah, you feel like you're missing out on some major Disney experience when you see some of these things that are happening at these international parks. You're like, wow, like I really want to get out to do some of that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. We attached an article, the official Disney Parks article, which shows some of the pictures of the new improvements at Tokyo Disneyland, and it just looks amazing. The Beauty and the Beast stuff. It's the similar sort of new, really highly realistic, stylized, and I guess maquettes of sorts. I don't know what you even call them, marionettes, but for the Beauty and the Beast experience, it just looks incredible. And there's even, a video on the Japanese, Disneyland YouTube channel that actually highlights a lot of the visuals. So, Aaron, if you haven't had a chance, I highly recommend watching it because it actually, the pictures don't even really do it justice when you see some of these updates and improvements. So, I'm adding it to the list, right, of international parks. I think you and I, we've briefly talked about it here and there, but I think there's one thing, I don't know how long this podcast runs, but sometime during the course of the run of this podcast, we need to make it to every single one of the Disney parks. Needs to be a thing.
Yeah, that is it's an ultimate goal for me.
Yeah.
To get to all of the parks eventually. I don't know if it's realistic. I mean, that's a lot.
Yeah.
When you think about it. Even if you tried to hit one international one every couple years, that would still take a while to do. And, you know, that's a lot of money too. You know, that's I can go to Florida and you know, drop a couple $100 on a round trip ticket. I already have it's definitely an undertaking. So I don't know if it'll happen, but it's definitely a hope of mine.
I'm not going to lie. I am at an unfair advantage because I can get deployed and stationed overseas. And I say that because that's one great thing about military life is that you travel all the time. You don't even have choice for where you travel, but there are parks all over the world. So like if I get stationed anywhere like Korea or Japan, which are all things you can do, that can be my excuse to, you know, just hop off to the parks here or there. At taxpayer expense, you're welcome, Aaron. no, I kid. But if that does happen, we need to prioritize it. I'll make the excuse like I'll book all the rooms. I'll make it as attractive as possible for Vic. Like leave the kids at home with the grandparents, and make a week of it. Because I know you guys have looked at Beijing and some of the other parks. So who knows? It'll be.
Yeah, we did. We were very close to going to Shanghai, and we didn't. We ended up changing our plans, but that was kind of the first one. So I think she's kind of already given me the okay that as long as I take her somewhere really cool, and it's not the only thing, Disney's not the only thing we're doing.
Exactly.
We're doing all the other stuff too. She'll let me go to a Disney park. So
yeah, like
they're all on the list. Paris, Hong Kong, Shanghai, Japan, like they're all on the list.
Oh, nice. I love it. All right. One last news story, if you're willing to do it with me, Aaron. And it seems very insignificant compared to everything else we've been talking about on the podcast. but I have to just tell you how hyped, as an Atlanta native, that finally the new Coca-Cola Walt Disney Resort Collection and the new Coca-Cola Center is open. Now, we haven't talked about it on the show. It's been open a little while, but the Coca-Cola store at Disney Springs is finally open, and they just unveiled a whole collection of merchandise associated with it. And it's the first time that I realized it was open, so therefore I put it in the show notes because I am really excited about it. I don't know why, other than I have fond memories of going to the Coke Museum as a kid in Atlanta, and I'm really excited that you can now do this Disney style.
Are you a big Coke fan?
I don't.
Bottle caps and stuff on the wall?
No, here's the problem. I'm not. Because adult Riley knows that, you know, branding and marketing is exactly that. And that nostalgia right. is exactly that. But that doesn't mean I don't remember all of the giant stuffed Coca-Cola polar bears that my grandmother would have that she collected and put in her house every Christmas. Or the going to the Coke Museum as a kid and, like, growing up overseas, going back to and tasting all the different Cokes that I hadn't had in years as, like, a 12-year-old. And I was like, oh, wow, that's crazy. So, yes, Coke has that sort of... It feels Christmassy to me, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, it makes sense.
Which means that whatever marketing directors that they've been paying bajillions of dollars since the 1950s, it's been working.
It's one of my favorite, you know, beverages to drink. Like, if I'm going to drink a soda, I typically am going to drink Coke. Mm. And when I was younger, probably in like my 20s, you know, I got married pretty early. We actually did have some Coke decorations in our house because we just kind of liked the look of it. The branding's great. And, you know, we kind of grew out of that look and we don't do that anymore. But we, you know, there was a little short time period in my life. So I do enjoy going to the Coca-Cola store at Disney Springs, and they have a really cool, like, rooftop bar thing going on up there too, that you can hit. That's pretty cool, and you can see it's like a great view of Disney Springs from up there.
Oh, I love it.
So it's definitely
come
a cool
on
spot.
Next time. So I haven't even been. I'm going to next time. Well, Mr. Aaron Goins, that's the music. That means it's time.
Disney Plus picks. Kingdom store, the Animal Kingdom show just came out.
I didn't even give us time for that. Yeah, so is it good? I haven't seen it.
Like a 10-second, just because I just watched the first episode of the Animal Kingdom, kind of. I think it's a National Geographic show, but it's about Animal Kingdom and how they kind of handle their animal population.
I've seen some headlines. Is it good? People seem to like it.
It was good. I mean, it's definitely kind of, it's, I would say, simple. And it's, you know, something you'd watch with the kids kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's not like super exciting or getting into a lot of like really deep details of the inner workings of it. They really kind of focus on a more shallow view of like, hey, here's this giraffe that has a name and this is how we like taught her to get her toenails clipped, you know, like that kind of thing. And so
yeah,
it's cool. My son loved it. But it's definitely not like, if you're looking for like this insider's view at how Disney, you know, how Animal Kingdom works, it's definitely not that.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember the overall behind the scenes documentary, I forget what, the Imagineering story, the segments on Animal Kingdom, especially the Pandora expansion, are amazing. But yeah, that's pretty cool.
I've only watched the first episode, so maybe as it goes on, maybe they get more into that stuff. But it looks like it's just going to kind of focus more on like specific animals. And
yeah.
And it is cool to see how they, you know, they really have experts working there and people that are taking care of these animals. It's not by any means, you know, maybe if someone wanted to criticize them for kind of mishandling or not taking care of these animals, you'd be hard pressed to do that.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. That's a good pick. The only thing I've watched recently on Disney Plus, I have to admit, is the Lego Star Wars specials. I'm trying to remember what they're called.
Okay.
It's like a Duel of the Skywalkers and a bunch of others. Yep.
The Yoda Chronicles.
New Yoda Chronicles, not to be confused with the old Yoda Chronicles. They're kind of hilarious. There's one where Qui-Gon Jinn really wants to be a helpful Force ghost, so Yoda gives him a pickle jar to open. It's hilarious hijinks. I don't know why I watch these things. I'm definitely not the target audience age.
Did you ever watch Freemaker Adventures?
No, I never did. Okay. I know that
you
was a thing.
Watch the Freemaker Adventures. If you like Lego Star Wars humor, you would love that show.
I was surprised how much I appreciated it. It's sort of a combination of, I don't know, funny Lego kids programming, but also just that hint of Robot Chicken that I love. So there you go. Mr. Goins, tell people on the internet where they can come, where they can find you.
You can find me at AV Goins on Twitter, and you can listen to my podcasts other than this one, Star Wars Bookworms, Bad Wolf Radio.
Nice. Check it out. And you can, of course, stay in touch with this show. It's at Mouse and Castle on Twitter, facebook.com/mousecastle, and mouseandcastle@gmail.com if you want to shoot us an email. Big shout out and thank you to Chris Provost of Provost Park Pass. Yes, I said it right that time. At the beginning, I was like, there's a lot of alliteration here, but I got it. But yeah, check out their brand new podcast and give them some love as they join the world of Disney podcasting, Provost Park Pass. Love what they do. So big thanks to Chris for giving us that breakdown at the beginning of the show. And then, of course, you can find me online as well. I'm at The Riley Guy, R-I-L-E-Y, on Twitter, on Instagram, you know, all around the internet these days. You can check out the Star Wars Report podcast, if Star Wars is your thing, at StarWarsReport.com. But until next time, I don't really have anything pithy to say, but just take care of each other. It's a really rough time in the world and amongst the Disney cast members. So take care of each other, and we'll see you guys next time on the Mouse and Castle podcast. That's a show.
Mandalorian coming back this month, too.
Oh, yeah. That's crazy. It's already happened.